This is Digital Story Podcast number 515, January 19th, 2016. Today's theme is The State of Mirrorless. I'm Derek Story. It's a good idea on occasion to step back and revisit corners of our universe that have meaning for us. Today's corner is mirrorless photography. In part, I'm doing this because the deeper I fall into the film project, the more I'm reminded of why mirrorless photography is so popular. All you have to do is look closely at the Leica M rangefinder, Konica Hexar, or Contax G series to realize that photographers have always loved this form factor. Tell me that Fujifilm's brand new X-Pro2 doesn't delight the same senses as a Leica rangefinder. My Contax G1 35mm has virtually the same footprint as the Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II that I love shooting with. Why it took us so long to rediscover these aesthetics in digital form, I don't know. But what I do understand is that now we have Fujifilm, Olympus, and others rekindling those flames from photography's golden era. There's no putting out the fire. The State of Mirrorless. Well, this seems like a great week to revisit this particular form factor, in part because Fujifilm has just released some killer cameras, the X-Pro2 that I talked about, the little rangefinder with the 28mm, all sorts of goodies. I mean, really, some really nice stuff, some really beautiful cameras. And there are some more coming, not necessarily from Fujifilm, but from some other folks. And I just think that the first half of 2016 is going to be a banner year for mirrorless hardware. And in a lot of ways, I think mirrorless is as popular as I've seen it. And, you know, what are some of the reasons why these cameras are liked by so many photographers? Well, we have to start with the smaller form factor. These things are much easier to carry around than a big DSLR kit. And it's not just the body, it's the lenses. And in fact, for me, it's probably more the lenses than the body. And one of the things that I like about mirrorless photography is I have a lot of choice in the type of lenses I put on my Olympus or Panasonic camera. I can go with the very small Panasonic 20mm f1.7 or Olympus 14-42 EZ zoom lens that's very compact. Or I can go big, like the Olympus 40mm to 150mm f2.8 Pro lens. And when I say big, I mean big for the mirrorless world, not necessarily big for the DSLR world. Because, I'll give you an example. Take the latest Olympus 300mm f4 Pro telephoto lens. That lens gives you an effective focal length of 600mm at f4 constant aperture, and is about the size of the 70-200mm Canon, and it weighs a lot less, and it's actually smaller than that too, and you can get it for $2,500. So a 600mm f4 Pro lens for $2,500. You know, so even when you go big, it's fun and mirrorless. So the lenses are definitely part of the appeal. I think incredible design is also there too. Whether you're looking at a Sony, a Panasonic, an Olympus, a Fujifilm, the design is beautiful on these cameras. I don't know. I mean, for a while, I really felt like that DSLRs were really all starting to look the same. Now, the exception was Pentax, in my view. I thought Pentax really tried to do something different with the DSLR body design. But for the most part, a DSLR is a DSLR, and that's not the case with mirrorless. A Panasonic GH4 looks much different than a Sony Alpha 7, which looks much different than Olympus EM10, which looks much different than a Fujifilm X-T10. And each of them look good. So I think the incredible design is really part of the appeal. Another thing, sophisticated electronics. I mean, these cameras roll up all the features that we used to only get a little bit of here and there in our DSLRs. Almost all these cameras can shoot multiple exposures, do time-lapse, have all these functions. For instance, the bulb timer on the Olympus cameras where the image builds up on the viewfinder during the exposure. I mean, stuff like this, the incredible, incredible technology in there. These cameras had Wi-Fi first. These cameras just basically have everything that you would want electronically inside these very compact bodies. And then finally, we have outstanding image quality. Whether you're shooting with the Sony Alpha series or you're shooting with the smaller sensor, Micro Four Thirds, the image quality is very, very good on all these. And you're going to be hard-pressed to tell the difference just by looking at a print from your favorite Canon or Nikon than from your favorite Sony or Fujifilm camera. You're going to be very, very hard-pressed. In fact, I think you just might as well roll the dice. You might as well flip a coin because I think it's going to be about the same results. Now, when you look at the design of mirrorless cameras, I think they're basically falling into two categories right now, two very broad, basic categories, retro and modern. In the retro category, Fujifilm and Olympus are leading the way. Fujifilm has their beautiful range finders that very much look like Leica M and some of the other classic rangefinder designs from the golden era of photography. And Olympus has harkened back to both their pen camera and to their OMD series, both of which were very popular, and they were very smart bringing back those designs in digital form. So those are the leaders, in my opinion, in the retro category. Now, in the modern category, Sony, I think, leads the way. And what they've done is they've taken the classic DSLR look. And not only have they made it smaller, but to me, they've made it more angular. I really like the lines on the Sony camera. They're clean. They're well-defined. Yes, it looks like a DSLR, but it's a small, very tightly designed DSLR. Panasonic has taken a little different look. Like the GH4 is more rounded and what we'd say modern look. It does have that DSLR form factor. Even though it has those attributes, it still looks different than a lot of DSLRs out there. But I would definitely put the GH4 in the modern category, along with the Alpha A7 series. Those, to me, are pushing the envelope on camera design today without going retro. And then, of course, Fujifilm and Olympus pushing the envelope on the retro design. Going back to the lenses for a second, I think the variety of lenses that we have really at this stage of the game, I mean, Olympus and Panasonic have done an outstanding job of adding to their lens catalog in a relatively short time, in a matter of a few years. Sony has shown a real commitment to their lens roadmap and now are really offering a terrific variety, as is Fujifilm, again. A nice catalog of lenses. So even though this form factor, the mirrorless form factor, is relatively young, we have a lot of glass to choose from. Going back to analog for a second, I finally, after all these years of wanting one, was able to purchase a Contax G, a G1. And I tell you, that was, to me, one of the nimble cameras of its day in terms of interchangeable lens cameras. Now that they're not made anymore, and now that the whole, you know, story is over in terms of development, you look at the G series, and you didn't have that many lenses, in all honesty. A super wide angle, what, a 16 millimeter, I think, Hologon, a 21 millimeter, a 28 millimeter, a 35 millimeter, I believe, 45 millimeter, a 90 millimeter, and I can't remember if they put a 60 in there or not. They may have. But that was pretty much it. That was the lens catalog. And it was impressive, and people were happy, and they loved shooting with it. But my point being, not so much, you know, getting on contacts or only having those lenses, all of which I would love to have, by the way, in case anyone has, you know, one stashed away in the sock drawer there, just contact me. I'd be happy. I know this is a digression. Excuse me for a second. But I particularly want the 45 millimeter lens. That is one of the sharpest 45 millimeters ever. I would love to have one. Just saying, to put things in context, if you look at Contax did over the span of the G series, and you look at how good of a job these other camera manufacturers I'm talking about have done in, you know, roughly the same period of time, it's impressive. It's really impressive. So, I mean, the lenses are something that I marvel at in addition to the cameras themselves. So if you want to get involved with the mirrorless game, you know, where do you start? How do you find the camera? I mean, obviously, I like four of these brands a lot. So which one? Well, it's interesting. I've watched people make their selections. I've watched people start at one place and end up at another. And I think a lot of it comes down to if you like the way a particular camera looks, if you like the Fujifilm approach to design for either the X-T series or the Rangefinder series, then I would start there. If you like the way the Olympus cameras look, I would start there. Same with Panasonic and Sony. Since the visual appeal is such an important part of this, I think that's not a bad place to start. And it feels like to me that when people start with a camera, they really like the way that it looks. The other pieces seem to fall in place. Now, I've watched people go from Micro Four Thirds to the larger sensor, for example, with Fujifilm. Or, you know, Micro Four Thirds is four thirds, right? So that it's not a square, but it's, you know, four thirds, four on one side, three on the other. And some people, especially people who have shot with traditional DSLRs or film cameras, like a little bit more of a rectangular look. You're going to get more of that rectangular look with Sony and with Fujifilm. You'll get the four-thirds look with Panasonic and Olympus. So, I mean, I think that's something to that there, too, you know. So you want to take a look at that. You want to take a look at price. You want to take a look at the lenses that are available to you and how much they cost and how big are they. Because I think one of the motivating reasons for moving to mirrorless is to lessen the load, is to carry a smaller camera bag. So if you got a small body and you're carrying big old lenses, how much have you really gained? So look at that. Are there lenses that you like in the size that you want? So those are all things that you want to take a look at. And then, of course, look at the technology for each of the cameras that you're considering. But I'll tell you right now, the technology is going to be pretty good in all of them. Okay, so which cameras do I like? Oh, my gosh. It's hard for me, but I'll give you just a few of my favorites. The OMD EM5 Mark II. Love this camera. At the end of the day, it's probably my go-to camera. The EM10 Mark II. If I want a little smaller camera, a little lighter camera, but still wildly powerful, it's a great choice. The Panasonic GM5. This camera is on its way out. There was some really good pricing for it around the holidays. I've noticed that the price is starting to creep up again, although there are still some good deals out there. But if you want a really small camera that still gets the job done, Micro Four Thirds format, GM5, it's a beauty. I really like it a lot. The Fujifilm X-T10. Fujifilm has a lot of wonderful offerings. At the end of the day, though, the X-T10 is my favorite. I love the size, the pricing of it. I love its capabilities. I think it looks terrific. What a nice camera. What a beautiful camera. And then in the Sony world, the Alpha A7 R2. I know I'm going right to the most expensive one there. But, I mean, if you're going to go full frame in a mirrorless camera, man, just, Why not go for it? Why not go for it? And if I were to get a Sony, that's the one that I would get. So, you know, those are a few of the cameras that I just think are wonderful examples of what's going on in the mirrorless world right now. Stay tuned. There is more that I can't talk about right now that's going to be happening over the next few weeks. It's a very exciting time. And the state of mirrorless is in great shape, and I think it's going to have a very good year in 2016. In the news, build an Olympus mirrorless camera out of paper. And this was covered by Petapixel. I love this story. I just saw this story today. I just really dig it. Looking for a fun little weekend craft project or some thrifty home decor? You can make yourself an Olympus mirrorless camera out of paper. Olympus has a special family-friendly webpage for kids, and one of those sections is for paper craft. There are two PDF templates that you can use to print and put together your own camera. The first one is for the OMD EM10 Mark II, and the other is for the smallest Olympus Penlite EPL7. So I downloaded these templates. So again, I have the link to the story in Petapixel, and I downloaded the templates, and they're just cool. They are literally these paper templates that look, they're really nice drawings. I mean, really nice drawings that you cut out, you assemble, and you can make this little paper camera replica that sits on your desk or you know, whatever. You can give it as a fun gift. But I love stuff like this. I thought you might get a kick out of it. The PDF templates are free. Just follow the links on the Petapixel article and they'll take you right there. And have some fun with it, really. I mean, these are neat. I'm gonna have some on my desk, I'm telling you right now. Products we love. The Lexar 256 gigabyte USB 3.0 SSD. They come in two models, 256 gigabyte and 512 gigabyte. The 256 that I'm using runs for about $133, including a USB 3 cable. They're just nice to have along. I love having an extra 256 gigabytes with me to back up my photos, to, you know, for whatever I need, including bringing stuff with me that maybe I'll need on the road, you know, some photo catalogs or something in case someone calls me and wants a specific shot from last year or something like that. The read-write is quite good. It can read up to 450 megabytes per second. It can write right up to around 245 megabytes per second. I have been loading my Capture One Pro catalog on there when I travel so that I can have a catalog with me, but I don't have to keep it right on my MacBook Pro. And it performs very well off this little guy. Now, there's one thing about these, and I was curious if they changed this with the newer model, so I tested it. The format for these Lexars, for these SSD drives, is EXFAT, E-X-F-A-T. And in order for the drive to work properly, you pretty much have to leave it that way. And what I mean properly, I mean being stable and reliable, but also it has like these little LEDs on the front. So you can look at it, and by the number of LEDs that are lit, you can tell how full it is. And in order for those to work properly and everything else, it needs to stay in that format. Now, I had tested the other one, the previous model, and I tried reformatting it to Mac OS X. It seemed like it worked. The LEDs definitely did not work. They went into every other mode and just basically said, no, we're not functioning properly. And then I talked to a tech at Lexar, and he said, I don't know. I said, you know, it's probably not going to be reliable. So he said, if I were you, I'd format it back to EXFAT, which I did. So it hasn't really been a problem for me. It's been less of a problem for me since I switched to Capture One Pro, because I don't have to worry about having a Mac-only Aperture library on there. The Capture One Pro library catalog, as they call it, works great on the XFAT format. So that isn't an issue. Obviously, things like JPEGs and TIFFs and RAW files, not an issue. So unless you're running an Aperture library, an iPhoto library, or a Photos for OS 10 library on there, or you want to do, Pages files or something like that, which you probably shouldn't have to anyway, because you could just use iCloud for Pages and Numbers and all that. Keeping it in XFAT format shouldn't be a big issue. But it's something I want to make you aware of, because if you do get it, if you do spend $133, there's a link, by the way, in the show notes to the article that I wrote. I want you to have a good experience. I want it to work properly. And this really isn't documented, what I'm talking about. In fact, I talked to the rep at CES about it, and she wasn't really totally familiar that that was an issue. So I said, I'm going to test it. So I have, and that's the scoop on it. These are cool little SSD drives. They're very affordable. They're very light, and they're easy to use. I want to talk about wood prints again. I brought this up last week, and this has to do with the folks at inkdot.com. So I had some more people come over and take a look at the wood print, and one of the funniest ones to me was my wife. She listened to last week's podcast. It was great. She goes, I want to see this wood print that you're talking about. And I said, it's been up for a little bit. You haven't seen it when you've been over? And she goes, I don't think so. So she came over for something else the other day. And I showed it to her. I said, here it is. It's the one of the two zebras. She looked at, that's the wood print. She goes, I was expecting something else. And I was going, what were you expecting? Well, she goes, that just looks like a really nice print. And I said, yeah, it is. The image is influenced by the color of the wood the same way that printing paper would be. But I said, it's not like, printed on a sawed up log or something. It's refined. It looks really nice. We had kind of a laugh about it and everything. So I said, but you need to hold it because it feels really great, with the beveled edges and everything. So she did, and she really, she loved the way it looked. She liked the weight of it. She loved everything about it. But I thought, I wanted to pass that along because, I'm not sure what you're picturing in your head when I say, wood print. Because if you're thinking Teresa was, where a sawed-off log, with very rustic image on it. This isn't that. This is a very nice photographic image that's archival, that's moisture and UV resistant, 5/8 thick, and it looks terrific. But yet it looks different. Just wanted to clear that up. And we can get 25% off. We have a code. The promo code is STORY, STORY. Just do it all in uppercase, STORY. And you can get 25% off any wood print. So an 8x8 that's normally $32, you can get now for $24. And that is a pretty good deal. That's a pretty good deal. So inkdot.com, what a great gift, even if it's to yourself, which sometimes those are my favorite. Member quotes of the week. Intelligent comments from the Digital Story Facebook page. We have a good one for you this week. So in regard to Sunday's Facebook post, my three photo apps for 2016. So I wrote this piece and published it on Sunday, and I've really, finalized my photographic workflow for 2016. My go-to application, my photo management application, the ultimate home for all my RAW files, is Capture One Pro 9. And then my photo application that backs up my iPhone shots, that is my sharing across devices, that makes GPS geotagging easy, that makes, going from the app to Instagram and all that easy, that's Photos for OS 10. And then a bit of a wild card app, but I just really like this app a lot, is Exposure X by Alien Skin. And I'm using that app for those really super quick turnaround jobs. So I don't want to enter, the images into a catalog and keyword them all that. I don't want to do that right now. Just want to take the shots. I want to refine a couple of them, and then I want to post them. And then I'll work on them later. And Exposure X is just so cool for that. And it allows star ratings and color tags. It's fast. And, you know, I use the application to put the images where I want on a drive. And then later on, maybe that evening or whatever, then I can just point Capture One to all those pictures that I took off the card, bring them into Capture One's database, add the keywords, do all that stuff later on. So Exposure X, to me, I just love the look of the app. I love the way it performs. It's just really neat. So those are the three apps I talked about in the article. And then we got this ensuing conversation on Facebook. I'm not going to read you all the comments. There are quite a few of them. But I'm going to read you some that I thought were quite interesting. John wrote, "As a former Aperture user, I have had some frustrations with Lightroom. And don't get me started where Photoshop is concerned. Looking at Capture One subscription at $15 a month. Love the interface. I'm one of the few people who loved Adobe's mistake in changing the import features. Too bad they had to change it back." And when John wrote that, I said, you know, John, I'm just glad you said that, because it seems like no one said they liked the import dialog box when Lightroom changed it. And I was thinking, someone had to like it somewhere. You know, you never get 100% of anything, you know, in this world. So anyway, that's what John had to say. And then Preston added, "Capture One needs to bite the bullet and pay to license the ability to host Photoshop files, or program this feature in if that's what's needed." And I think Preston's right about that. And it's funny, when I've talked with the Capture One folks, you know, that's always been on the table. There's been lots of discussion about that. They haven't given me any leaning one way or another, but my sense of it is that someday that'll happen, and I totally agree with Preston on that. Niles wrote, "Speaking of Photoshop alternatives, I would add the outstanding Affinity Photo to your list." And I totally agree with Niles. I think Affinity Photo is fantastic. I don't have it in my particular workflow because, to me, Affinity is more of a Photoshop replacement than it is an Aperture or Lightroom replacement. You know, I do have Photoshop for when I need it, which is, you know, just a few specific things. But I'll tell you, and I commented this to Niles, I think Affinity Photo is great. I love the design. They won a Mac Design Award. But I'm using the editing extensions that they just released for Photos for OS X, and they're cool. So I am using Affinity, but I'm using it via Photos for OS X. When you update the latest version of Affinity Photo, you automatically get those editing extensions if you want them. And they are way, way cool. If you're using Photos for OS X, they're definitely worth taking a look at. John added, "Adding plugins to Capture One would be great, like all my old Nik, Topaz, and On One. I hate losing that investment as much as Aperture." I agree with you. "Also, I second the idea of a Lynda course by you. The current one has way too many prejudices about things outside of the app." You may have heard me talk about this here on the podcast, but the Capture One Pro Essential Training by me is real. In fact, I have finished recording it. It's in the can for me, and it's on its way to editing right now. It's a big title, so it will, I'm sure, spend some time in editing, especially with all my they're usually pretty good about turning around my titles. So hopefully we will see that essential training before too long. And I'm telling you right now, in my version of Capture One Pro, there are over 100 movies, and I really like the app, and I really come from a place that I want you to find the easiest way to learn this app, and that's what I'm trying to do in that. And I think I did it. We'll find out once it gets out there. Raphael wrote, "My rant of the day. I wonder if anyone at Apple has the slightest idea how complicated they are making our photo processing experience. Have they lost their mind? Three software to portably replace one? How difficult would it be to continue working on Aperture? I guess they have so much money these days that they lost perspective and care for their users. It's sad. And a lot of people agree with Raphael. And, you know, his point is a very good one. It represents, I think, the frustration that people feel about having their workflow taken away from them, which is essentially what's happened for a whole lot of people. Learning the software to manage your workflow is one of the more challenging things in photography. Certainly much harder than learning how to use a new camera, right? Or almost anything else that we do. It's a big deal when we have to change. We don't like to have to do that change. And being forced to change is very frustrating. And I think his point's well taken. Charlie added, actually, Photos is not that bad of an app. It just needs a few improvements, mainly in rating images with star rating and color tagging. Also, keywording needs to be worked on too. With these few improvements, I could probably completely leave Aperture behind and use Photos 100% of the time. Many of the plugins with Photos make this a very good app. And I agree too. I think Photos is getting better all the time. At some point, they've got to do something about the front end. And, you know, Charlie nailed it. Star ratings, color tags, and keywording. If they just address that, the editing extensions are taking care of the back end of it. The app is written from the ground up. It's fast. It's beautiful. It's cloud connected. Just throw us a bone and give us these couple things. So those are the intelligent thoughts from our virtual camera club on that topic. I so appreciate all of you who contribute, and those that I didn't read, I appreciate your comments also. I can only have the spots go on for so long, however. So post your thoughts on our Facebook page. I promise you I read them, and I will even share some of them on the podcast. How to pick a frame and a matte for your print. So I want to revisit this topic that I also brought up last week, which is, you know, I think one of the hardest things to do is visualize how a print is going to look on the wall with a certain kind of mat and a certain kind of frame on a certain kind of wall with certain types of furniture and all that. And Image Framer can help you do that. Image Framer is a terrific application where you can drop an image in there, and then you can just put your feet up on the couch and play with basically unlimited number of looks in terms of matting, framing, thickness, density, all that kind of stuff. And then once you get it the way that you want, you can show it to other people and say, what do you think? What do you think with this combination on this wall? Get their feedback. And then when you go to the frame shop or you do the framing yourself and you're going to the supply store to get the supplies, you know that what you buy is going to look great. And I just think that is such a helpful thing. And I just wanted to revisit this that week. And it ties into the thing that I'm thinking, you know, making prints and putting them on the wall is a beautiful thing. So anyway, Jacob has set up an Image Framer landing page for us, specifically for TDS listeners. He has discounts on all three versions of the app. Take a look at this app, see what you think, have some creative fun after you finished working on the image to really highlight it and just drive it home. Put the frosting on the cake. All right, just a couple wrap-up items here under Found Treasure. So the registration forms have gone out for the reserve list for the Point Reyes Photography Workshop. If you were on the reserve list, you should have a registration form. If you do not have your registration form, make sure you contact me. I'm so excited about this workshop. And then finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper. And I want to mention that, you know, when I talked about Out of Chicago last week, the whole reason why initially it got on my radar screen and the real reason why I'm able to go is because Red River Paper said, we want you to go to that workshop. We want you to speak about printing from mirrorless cameras and so forth. And we want to underwrite your travel expenses to do that. So those of you that are going to see me at Out of Chicago, And, you know, me getting out of California and doing a workshop in the Midwest, and the photo walks and the panel discussion, everything else we're going to do, that was made possible by Red River Paper. And they are that kind of sponsor. They are the folks that, I tell you, they are behind what we're doing here 100%. And I just so appreciate them, and I just wanted to give them a nod for making this all happen with the Out of Chicago thing in June. So anyway, in addition to that, they make really good printing paper for your inkjet printer, and it's very affordable. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper, and they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. All right, that is going to do it for this week. The state of mirrorless. It is a great state to be in. I tell you right now, I'm so thrilled about not only what we have right now, but what's coming down the pike. I'm going to be on the road next week. I got a great podcast lined up for you. Have some fun this week, but make sure you come back and join me for the next episode of The Digital Story. Bye-bye now.